This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, folks. Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire Football Podcast Preview Extravaganza 2023 edition. I'm making it bigger every time, Matt. So head over to MWR.com, Twitter, MWCWire, while it lasts and is a thing. Right? That's kind of what we're hanging on here. Because somebody in charge is like, yeah, we'll just screw around and see what happens. So like you put on Twitter, Matt, the website never fails.
That's right.
Fingers crossed. Now we're good. So we're talking team preview season. Perfect time, Matt, because we're recording this July 2nd. Correct, right before the holiday, July 4th. We'll keep it in self-contained. These are a preview, so if you're listening over 4th of July, you're driving somewhere. We have a few other shows. San Diego State is today. Utah State, Colorado State, Boise State. The past prior preview. So if you want to listen to those, if you're driving a distance or flying, hey, go back and find those. But today, Aztecs, and we have news, Matt, of what happened. We're gonna spend a little bit of time on it, kind of how it compares big picture for the Aztecs, but they're hanging out in the Mountain West for a minute. So that's where we're at right now as we preview this upcoming season, which day we're going to play in regardless, obviously.
Yes.
So the news, apparently, we'll make it quick and brief here because we don't need to make a big deal. July 1st, as of yesterday, a million teams changed conferences. So like Big 12 added teams officially, Sunbelt, American, all these Conference USA. And it's also a deadline if you're going to change conferences. For San Diego State, if they were to go to the Mountain West, it'd be about leave the Mountain West about $17 million to a Pac-12 invite. That still seems 78% happening. It seems like it in that range is down the road.
Yeah, a little but it slower, did. I think, than everybody expected. Probably still the most likely scenario whenever it comes to pass.
Yeah, it's the Pac-12 that's like, well, we don't have a TV deal yet, but it's like, do we need 10 teams to get our money or do we need 12? And I'll just say this: SMU is playing it perfectly. They haven't said a dang word about anything. So they're just waiting their time. Aztecs are like, are we go? Can we get there? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And oh, we're not there. We have 4 more hours to drive. Like the little kid in the backseat this weekend who's banging on your chair if you're listening to this as you're going to wherever. But so they're hanging around, which it's fine. It's expected because they don't have $30-something million to pay if they were to leave, say, August 5th and leave for 2024. So they're hanging around. It's pretty much expected because I talked with Kurt Kinney, San Diego Union Tribune, for my show, radio show I work on. He was not to be rude, but he's kind of Eeyore. He's like, I won't believe it until I see it. And that's probably the best stance I've heard of anybody about this from the Aztec side. So what did you want to discuss about this as it pertains to Aztecs kind of last year, this year, or kind of big picture?
Yeah, I mean, I think broadly speaking, I know that on Twitter there was a lot of, you know, jokes being laid, a lot made about a lot of a pride being expressed on the part of Aztecs fans. And I think, you know, given their track record over the last decade or so, I mean, it's hard not to see why. You know, they've had a couple of conference championships. They've been to a third one. They've, you know, generally been, you know, at or near the top of the Mountain West in more ways than one. Like, it's a healthy program. It's a thriving program all across the board. And, you know, I think, you know, there was a lot of sort of reactionary schadenfreude after the fact, I think it's important to note that, you know, if any other fan base in the Mountain West, whether it's Boise State, whether it's Fresno State, Colorado State, or any of the other, you know, schools that have been bandied about as potential expansion candidates here and there over the last couple of years, Aztec fans didn't act any differently than anybody else would have if they had been in their shoes.
They would have been, we're getting out of here, kick you to the curb, we don't care, we're better than you. Which,
and I think, yeah, to sort of narrow the focus to 2022 in particular, and to think about this football team, this football program in particular, the one thing you can say about San Diego State, you know, given their track record of success, is sort of that old axiom of, like, you know, good teams eventually figure things out. And yeah, I don't think even Aztecs fans would disagree that in the early part of last season, their team was not particularly good, especially on offense. Like, that the way that they played on that side of the ball for like the first month and change of the season, basically, I mean, it almost derailed the entire 2023 campaign for good.
You're telling me Braxton Burmeister didn't work out last year, as I predicted, and others. You're telling me a guy going to his third school didn't work out?
He did not work
out. Okay, continue. I just want to point that out because everybody was on me like, he'll be great. He's running quarterback. They had new coaches out there at Virginia. He'll be awesome. And I don't like to be right when it's negative things like that, but I just like the quarterback they have now in place, a million times better, which will be great this year.
Good teams figure things out. And part of it had to do with, you know, injury popping up at the position too. Like, let's not forget, they also went through two other quarterbacks before they finally had to turn to Maiden, who, you know, as everybody recalls, most people recall, I'm sure, was a safety.
Yeah.
You know, he transitioned from quarterback to safety, but then when Burmeister was, you know, injured for a time, when Kyle Crum and Leo Almave were injured for a time, they had no other choice but to go back to him. And that, you know, sort of necessity, you know, was one big reason why they were able to turn things around, as well as a defense that remained stout, even if it didn't necessarily always seem like it. Like, if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't know that the Aztecs defense was still very good last year. But in terms of like,
pretty good coordinator.
So like, there's sort of like two seasons within the 2022 season. There's the first five games, like pre-Jalen Maiden, where the Aztecs on offense, they averaged 4.4 yards per play. Not very good. In the last eight games, once he took over as the starter against Hawaii, I believe, that average got bumped up to 5.6. And so, like, they were much better on offense in the second half of the season than they were in the first half, while also maintaining a very strong defense all the way through. But then the second part of the season was also sort of defined by that offense's new growing pains, because as good as Jalen Maiden was, you know, one thing that really defined the stretch run for this team was, you know, killer turnovers, back-breaking mistakes. You know, you look at the three losses that they had in this back half of the season at Fresno State, home versus Air Force, and then the bowl game against Middle Tennessee, they were minus 10 in turnover margin. And so, you know, when you sort of flip the chapter from that season to this one, you know, the offense, you know, still has questions, but I think there's no doubt, I would say that it looks on paper to be much better shape. The defense is having to replace two or three major stars, but, you know, still returns more talent than you think and brought in some really interesting pieces on that side of the ball. So it's sort of that balance between, okay, can the defense hang on to that high level performance that they've become accustomed to over the last half decade or so? And can the offense hold on to the gains that it made down the stretch while also sort of cleaning up where things went awry in those games that they lost last year? I don't think there's any doubt that they're going to remain in the mix, but as is the common refrain in all of these team preview podcasts so far, they've got just about as many questions as every other team that we've talked about to this point. And I would say for the teams that are going to follow this team preview as well.
Yeah. So let's just kind of get into like one of the big changes. New offensive coordinator, Ryan Lindley, comes in.
Yes.
He was the quarterback under, see there, Brady Hoke the first time around.
Yes.
I just remember the, so it's funny because Brady Hoke, remember what he did last time. And Lindley was there. I remember one article I wrote up years ago, like, oh, he was projected number one draft pick, the stupid day after the mock drafts, which are lame and dumb. I think he went to the Cardinals, stuck around a couple years in NFL, but he was a prolific passer in the Mountain West in San Diego State. And him coming back to coach the offense is going to be a pretty big deal. So there's going to be some changes for what we see. I think that's one of the better additions, at least what potentially can happen. Because like you mentioned, midway season when Jalen Maiden came in, because they made the change offensive coordinator, promoter from within for a little bit to kind of just keep it stable, which smart move to do. Just no, you're not going to bring an outside guy. Offense looked better. And my opinion was better. So it made everything better because the running game wasn't great. Offensive line had some shuffling here and there. But I think that's going to be a big hire. We might actually see a San Diego State team, despite losing guys like Jesse Matthews and Tyler Shavers, other wide receivers, and I think a tight end as well is gone, if I recall. Yeah, Matthew or whatever. They're going to pass more, I think. That's the point. The running game needs to be better than what it's been, but I think with Lindley coming in, Brady Hoke, remember he took the spread offense to Michigan, and when he came back, he's not running the spread again here in San Diego State, right? Like, he's been trying to do what they've done all before.
No, they're probably still going to run a lot of two tight end sets.
Oh, yeah.
Two wide receiver, two tight ends, one running back.
Definitely. But I mean, like, Hoke isn't doing what he did the first time around. He's changed because he's defensive coach, remember? But he's run the spread. Why is he going to Michigan? Blah, blah, blah. They're going to run, like, because they're going to run not necessarily jumbo set, but like I said, two tight end sets, maybe just two running backs and the full, a tight end can technically make the H back. So, like, what do you want to say? Fullback, tight end, that type of guy where he'd just be an extra blocker, not necessarily the traditional fullback, but a big guy to plow the road for whoever's carrying the ball. But I do think they're still going to, but they're going to want, you don't bring in Ryan Lindley to run the ball. You bring him in to, let's try something different, sling it, because it worked last time when he was actually under center playing for Hoke. And I think this is going to be a big thing in the conference, especially running game had one of its worst years in a long time this past season.
Well, I mean, don't forget, like, he was their quarterback's coach last year. And so he already had an active hand in sort of shepherding Maiden into this new role. But considering they sort of had to retool things on the fly, you know, I think they should, you know, maybe they feel pleasantly surprised about how good Maiden was overall. But I think, you know, they did throw the ball more often, like even in the bowl game, they were particularly good at throwing the ball against the Blue Raiders. But, you know, Maiden had 43 passes and in the 8 starts that he made, he threw at least 22 passes in every game.
Better passing.
But that's still, I think, a little more than most, if not all, of what you were accustomed to seeing from an Aztecs quarterback in recent years.
Christian Chapman comes to mind.
Yeah. So, you know, on the surface, you know, completing, you know, slightly under 60% of his throws, 59.5, averaging 8.6 yards per attempt, which, if you'll remember, was number one among qualifying quarterbacks in the Mountain West, I think, excepting like Air Force quarterbacks, which, you know, tend to typically have a higher YPA. And, you know, 12 touchdowns, but the big thing, which again comes down to better decision making, 10 interceptions, and which equates to an interception rate of 4.2%. That's too high. You know, we talked about it with other quarterbacks, I think, namely Cooper Lagob, Utah State, and, you know, according to Pro Football Focus, one other thing that was sort of noteworthy is the fact that, you know, he also had a turnover worthy rate. Of 5.6%, which was also one of the highest amount in the Mountain West. And so between the decision-making and maybe having greater finesse when he does drop back to throw, when they want to continue stretching the field, PFF also marked him with the third fewest big-time throws of any quarterback in the Mountain West, too. He only had 6 of them in 8 games. And so I think, you know, those two things taken in tandem are going to be where the difference really lies for this offense heading into 2023, because I think he's got the goods. You know, he's not necessarily asked to run a lot, but, you know, before adjusting for sack yardage, yeah, he can run a little bit. You know, he had 230 yards on the ground before you adjust for sacks, had a few touchdowns. So he has that element of his game to it, but they're going to want him to be a more effective passer. And it's really going to come down to those two things.
Well, think of this. He got, again, he was playing safety last year, defensive back. He comes in, joined the quarterback room, because out of high school, he was a quarterback commit recruit. Mm-hmm. It's going to be similar. We talked about Taylen Green last week. I know Taylen Green played that first game last year for Boise State when Hank Buckmar got benched. Yeah. But it's all these guys, like, I'll talk about it every time. The Mountain West quarterback on surface, as of right now, it's like, how good is it going to be? There's so much potential with all these guys within the conference. Even going to Braden Trigger in Hawaii, there's potential to be exceed expectations. And this Maiden having actually, think of this, you're playing a completely different position, Matt, and you go, all right, you're playing quarterback. Well, I haven't played in a while. I'm pretty athletic. We know I can throw. Do I know the playbook? Do I know my teammates? How well do I know my center? How well do I know my wide receiver, my tight end number two? How well do I know my left tackle? Probably not great if you're playing defense. You don't know that. That's the thing. Knowing your teammates and being comfortable on your side of the ball, and then now having all spring and currently going through some workouts, going to be fall camp, he's going to take a big leap. Like, his yards per attempt is already great. Best in the conference, as we mentioned. Completion rate per game, right about 59.5 technically is exactly, which is fine. Not amazing, but that's better than we've seen some other prior San Diego State quarterbacks. It's no Clay Millen or Doug Brumfield, who are 64 and 72 respectively each. Not Cooper, close to Cooper Legault and Taylen Green. But if he can get just a touch higher, and he's getting the decision-making, actually having him play the position he's playing and not just chucked in there going, like, there's a reason he could be. I know Mountain West just has two all-conference quarterbacks. Like, I think if things go extremely well, I'm not predicting it, but I could see a scenario where he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the conference.
I think the other major question too, which we're going to, you know, rather than, you know, saying it three different times, as you talk about the other position groups, is that, you know, Maiden looks, you know, he looked good more often than not down the stretch, but one, progress isn't always linear. Two, there's just enough questions everywhere else on offense that, you know, the way he progresses, like his developmental path, you know, does seem like it has a lot of possibilities. Like, he could struggle if certain things aren't resolved in other parts of the offense, I guess is what I'm saying.
So where do we go? Running back, offensive line, where are we headed here?
Let's talk about the offensive line first, because that has been something of a big red flag over the last couple of years, which is odd, despite the fact that, you know, they've had, you know, NFL draft prospects, you know, come from this program, you know, like Olama Uwabe, you know, William Dunkel a couple of years ago, Zachary Thomas. So, like, they've had standouts, but as a unit, you know, even despite Maiden's success after the quarterback switch, this unit really struggled in a lot of respects last year. You know, even with Uluave, even with Josh Simmons, who, you know, recently transferred to Ohio State, the transfer portal, this was an offense that was 126th in average line yards per carry, which, again, out of 131 teams in the FBS, they were 128th in power success rate, which is, you know, short yardage situations, very un-San Diego State-like. 129th in stuff rate, which means that opponents got into the backfield at a higher frequency than just about any other team in the country. 25.2%. That meant every one of four times they wanted to run the football last year, zero or negative yardage. And then, you know, protecting Maiden was also kind of a concern, protecting the other quarterbacks, because they were only 92nd, only, with a 7.3% sack rate allowed too. So now, you know, they're having to replace Simmons, they're having to replace Uwabe, which, by the way, left tackle and center, arguably the two most important positions along the offensive line. And even though they're bringing back a lot of reps from last year, you know, Cade Bennett, I think, is probably the headliner in that regard. Left guard, zero sacks, only six hurries, according to PFF. But, you know, they have experience coming back. but they're going to need a lot more from a unit that is still relatively young. You know, guys like Ross Ulubala-Masiuli, Tom Mirabella, you know, Christian Jones, who's going to probably be stepping into that left tackle spot in Simmons' stead. They need to be better across the board, because I think more than anything, you know, if they, you know, struggle to protect Maiden, if they struggle to open running lanes consistently, that I think is going to keep this offense looking as erratic as it sometimes did, which cost them, especially in those games that they ultimately lost in the second half of last year.
Yeah, because if that line's not protecting Maiden in a running game, it's like, well, what do you got? And also they lose Josh Simmons to Ohio State. That's a big deal too, right tackle. Start 13 games.
Yeah.
So those guys, it's been a thing. Like we're at the point now where it should be, like, referring past couple years where you mentioned Dunkel and other guys going off the NFL. It's been long enough since they've been really good running the ball that we can no longer say, hey, this should be a strength for them. It should be. The past couple of years haven't been great for them protecting the quarterback, stable offensive line, or running the ball well. And the offensive line's been, like we mentioned, just not ideal. So we're at the point now where they're at a prove it point to say, hey, we are what we were in 2018, 2017, when we had Rashard Penny, Donald Pumphrey, and Jordan Byrd to a degree. It's not necessarily they need to have those 2,000 yard rushing seasons, but have this past year was the first time they're like under 4 yards of carry running the ball in a long time. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, 2009, I want to say. So offensive line needs to prove it. They need to find who's going to be stable and start. And their schedule will get to, it's not easy. Non-conference is very difficult for them. And they start off playing defending MAC champs in Ohio. It's at home, but still, they're going to need to figure things out. And they're in a proven mode for offensive line and running back for me at this point. Like, I give them a little benefit of doubt, but I'm not going to say, oh, they're guaranteed to be, say, the third best running attack in the conference, man, Air Force and whoever's number two. That's not San Diego State, because that's what's usually been. Aztecs, or some, usually Air Force, obviously, just because what they do. And then usually San Diego State's right there. Boise State's obviously been right there for majority of the time. Fresno State, past couple years, Jordan Mims, Ronnie Rivers, those type of guys. They've been in that mix. Now it's like, well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, like if you want to think of it in terms of, you know, even if they can't open running lanes consistently, can they do a better job of protecting Maiden, which I think was relatively their strength last year? You know, Pro Football Focus says that Maiden in particular absorbed 18 sacks. And in terms of like the number of pressures that he faced in you know, sack percentage off of those situations, you know, 17.8% is still on the lower end compared to his peers in the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. But you would like to see that be a little bit better. Like if you compare that to Taylen Green, for example, Taylen Green was a lot better, maybe in a category of his own, at Boise State, only 6% of pressures, which turned into sacks. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on both the quarterback and the line in front of him to keep last year's forward momentum moving in the right direction.
So who's going to run the ball for them this year, Matt? Because they lose a couple guys. So who's going to, guys, if there are lanes broken, open up for them? I know protecting quarterback's important, but I don't think this team can just rely only on Maiden and what he can do. They got to run the ball, which is stupid and typical football talk, but they're not going
to
be a
team. Well, okay, like, so here's a question for you then, to answer your question.
Go for it.
Do you think San Diego State is going to feel compelled to find the guy? Because more often than not, for better or for worse, you know, that has been, you know, Brady Hoke and whoever's offense coordinator has been, that's been their MO, to find one guy to sort of shoulder the majority of the loads. You know, most recently was Greg Bell, but that wasn't necessarily the case last year, where, you know, Jordan Byrd led the team in carries, but he only had 102 attempts for the entire season. He only averaged fewer than 8 attempts per game, while also sort of leading a committee of running backs. There were 4 different running backs who had at least 5 carries per game. So with Byrd gone and guys sort of having come up and taken on the lion's share of roles at various parts of 2022, you know, on the one hand, you've got candidates like Keenan Christen, who lost a little bit of explosiveness as a pass catcher, at least. You know, you look at his big, you know, catch and run touchdown in the bowl game against Middle Tennessee. You know, he had a similarly big catch and run, I believe, against Fresno State as well. But as a runner, which again, sort of, I think harkens back to the offensive line issues we talked about a minute ago, 71 rushing attempts under 4 yards a carry, 3.68.
Maybe it's Jalen Armstead. He was explosive running back that last year. He had, what, 50 carries an average?
He was definitely their hammer, which yeah, I think is sort of an touchdowns. Interesting, you know, the two of them, you know, like Armstead is definitely like the big bruising power kind of guy. You know, maybe kind of like if you want to throw it back to like an Adam Moema type. Yeah, I think Armstead, you know, took a step forward in that regard last year when he was given the opportunity to do so. Among the guys back this year, he was the only one to crack 6 yards per carry. But again, you know, I was actually kind of surprised in retrospect that he didn't get more work. You know, he had a couple of nice games late in the year against UNLV and against San Jose State. But, you know, are they going to give him more opportunities? Are they going to lean more on Cam Davis? Are they going to give Lucky Sutton more of a shot? They have options, and it could go in any number of directions, but it really does tie back into the offensive line where, you know, if the guys up front can't do their job, then whoever's carrying the ball behind them, it may not matter.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
I know, that's the problem. That's what we don't know. And so here's the thing, my thinking, the talent on offensive line is, here's my thing, their offense is like, we'll get the receivers, they're just okay across the board. Running backs, just like everything's maybe okay. Like Jalen Maiden, he'll take a big step. I think he'll be above average, but offensive line, probably just okay. Middle of the pack running game, as far as we know, what's coming back, probably just okay. What they lose on receiving, like losing Jesse Matthews and Tyrell Shavers, like they might just be okay on offense and have no true good identity. Cause like I said, outside of the past year or two, it's been running. Like the last time a good running game was it Greg Bell in the 2020 year, where the first half he's amazing, then kind of slowed down after a bit. Outside of them, the past 2 years, they've had no offensive identity that's been good. They've been, we want to run the ball, but we can't. We never really have a great quarterback, obviously, relatively speaking to big-time QBs. They can go back to Christian Chapman. They would love to have a guy go 15 of 20, 200 yards and two touchdowns, or one touchdown, no picks, or two touchdowns, no picks, something like that. They've had no offensive. They just honestly haven't been great on offense the past couple of years. Like past two seasons, they don't have their identity of what it was. So what's it going to be this year? They lose receivers. That's what I'm trying to figure out. What are they going to do?
So here's one thing in particular that I got my eye on with regard to the running backs in particular. And with Armstead, to sort of narrow that focus even more, there were 26 running backs last year in the Mountain West who had at least 50 carries. Interestingly enough, Armstead was number one in that group in yards after contact per attempt, which again, small sample size because he only had 52
carries.
He's
a big dude, man. He's what, 5'11", 220, something like that?
But he's exactly that kind of power runner where if they wanted to use the run to sort of salt games away late, like if they want to use the pass to set up the run, you know, lean on Maiden, lean on a passing game that looked definitely more explosive in the second half of last year. You know, it could be that guys like Kristen, like Cam Davis, are the ones who see the majority of action early in games. Okay. And if they get a lead, then Armstead could be the one who puts the nail in the proverbial coffin, you know, with getting carries late. So I'm very interested to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, I think, like, it's hard to see. They're going to be running multiple backs. I think he'll have a similar role last year. Maybe he may not lead the team in rushing attempts, but he should be. It should be almost what they did a couple years ago. They had Penny and Pumphrey. I guess it's more than a couple years ago, where you have a number one guy, which maybe they make him number one guy, but I could see him maybe doing, trying to look at a good comparison of like two backs that have like maybe what Boyce did last year. He had Genty with 156 and then Kalani with 221, maybe something somewhere in that range where you leave him late, where he's a bigger guy and can kind of push teams over when they're trying to close out a game or have a drive to come back to where, okay, he's only had 8 carries so far, but the fourth quarter, he gets 6 more on that final 2 drives or 7 more in the final drive or two to put things away or just bruise a defense that's already kind of fourth quarter fatigue.
Yeah.
That might be a good idea, but who's going to catch the ball? Because I mentioned Luz Shavers, Luz Matthews.
That's the top 2 targets.
Is it going to be some rando dude because Lindley wants to throw it to 5 guys, which we don't think will happen, but that's another area where it's like, well, again, the offense is a bunch of wait and see.
Yeah, but it's not like the cupboard is bare, but there are definitely more questions than proven entities. You know, in terms of the latter, I think, you know, one, they got Mark Redmond back, who's probably at this point one of, if not the best tight end in the Mountain West. You know, 21 catches, but may not seem like a lot, 233 yards and 2 touchdowns, but, you know, he got the job done in terms of, like, you know, doing what a San Diego State tight end needs to do, which is, you know, be a blocker and be a relatively reliable catcher. I think if there's one room for, you know, if there's room for improvement, it's the fact that he had 45 targets, which meant that, you know, with 21 receptions, his catch rate was under 50%. So I have to think they're going to work on that. And then, you know, with Mekhi Shaw, who had a very, you know, strong 4-game stretch in November, sort of into late November, only 29 catches, 349 yards, and 3 touchdowns, but he gives them at least a reliable name out of the slot, which is where he spent the vast majority of his time. The question is, who's going to play outside? Mm-hmm. Is it someone like Breon Penny, who's gotten, you know, a lot of praise over the last couple of off seasons? You know, is this finally his time to earn a starting gig and break out? You know, what kind of role is Rafael Williams Jr. going to play? You know, he came in as a transfer from Western Carolina, where he had 47 catches, 658 yards, and 6 scores last season. Maybe. You know, are the tight ends like Redmond, Jay Rudolph, and Cameron Harpole going to get a few more targets? And then what about the other young guys on the roster? You have guys like Josh Nicholson and Philippe Wesley, who were able to get their feet wet at times last year. So they've got options, you know, and pretty much all of these guys are like former 3-star guys at a minimum. And so it's going to be one thing to sort of turn that potential into production. It's there's a lot of unknowns here. And again, it could go in any number of directions.
Yeah. And I'm looking at Phil Steele's 4 deep. They have Redmond at tight end. So basically, he doesn't have any San Diego State receiver being on the 4 deep out of 12. Do you see a San Diego State receiver being a top 12 guy that's not a tight end?
Off the top of my head, if I'm being honest, no. But I think if everything goes according to plan, they aren't necessarily going to need it.
Yeah, they might not need it, but I was going to point that out. Because Jesse Matthews, like, he was, when he got the ball, he didn't get a ton. He was a player out there. When he got those catches, he made big plays, like, especially was it last year he had like what 5 touchdowns in the final 6 games or something like that? Pretty productive.
Yeah.
So if we're looking at like your best, I get the point. They could pass it to 4 or 5 guys, not including Redmond here, but maybe he's their leading receiver. Seems very likely. Do you want 4 guys who catch 30 passes each? That could be pretty good. But 30 catches each, that's like your top 25 guy in the conference. And I'm looking at last year's stats, you had Matthews with 45. You had, that was it for anybody 40 plus. So what are we looking at? A bunch of guys with 25 plus catches, one with 35?
So is that going to get it done? Scenario as last year.
I know, but with Ryan Lindley, I think they'd want to up that a bit. Not a lot, but
I think a lot of it is going to depend ultimately on how much they decide to throw the football as well.
Well, you said, what was it he threw in the bowl game? 42 times?
Yeah.
Permitted? That's probably more. That's a big question. Like, looking at what he did last year, I remember I made the dumb comp or made a dumb prediction that did not sit well with how many times he threw the ball, apparently, looking at his numbers. But if they have what he wants to do, or what they want to do, excuse me, What do you think is a good number? Because he threw 237 times last year, technically made and played in every game, but the first five games he had no passes, obviously, because he wasn't playing quarterback really at all. He had 36, 25. He had three or four over 30 plus. That seems like a lot. And he was fine. What do they want him to throw? Like, do they want him to throw 25 a game? I don't know what a good sweet spot is for a guy who's a kind of a brand new, almost a brand new quarterback. Like, he's had half a year experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think the upside, if you're looking to sort of sell people on optimism, is, yeah, the offense had its flaws, but it also got much more explosive, at least through the air, in the second half of the season. And, you know, other than losing, you know, Shavers and Matthews, pretty much everybody else is back everywhere. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's a path there where they can replace both of those guys and end up just fine.
Again, my whole offense here is wait and see. I think they'll take a step up. They'll be better, particularly because Maiden, I think he'll take a big leap. But I think the offense will be, they need to find some identity, whether it's, obviously there's two things, run or throw. I'm trying to think of a clever way to say it. But they need to find some identity. Are they transitioning back to what Hoke did before, where they pass a lot, pass more? Because last year they still threw a lot with Maiden out there, which is pretty shocking for a guy who you're playing DB, come play quarterback, and throwing 230-something times in like seven games. Like, mm-hmm. he threw almost 30 times a game last year, and it was fine. So I don't know, maybe less is more a little bit. He's more efficient. Maybe you'd rather have him go throw 25 times a game, complete 64% of his passes, and has a better interception ratio. That's obviously fewer in their favor. Maybe that will be better for them because you're more efficient despite not throwing as much. But that requires running game to give you a backing to allow that to be the case. So I think they'll be fine, and they'll take a step forward passing. And if they get a running game that's even like just a slightly better than last year, and what I think Maiden's leap can be, I think their offense should be pretty good. But again, right now we're sitting here right before 4th of July. There's a lot of, we don't know if who's going to do what outside of quarterback.
I think the other good news is that the defense should also continue to be pretty good. So even if the offense is inconsistent from week to week, I think that is less likely to be the case on the other side of the ball. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit about sort of how, you know, the offense defined the season at the very beginning, but I think it is worth noting that, yeah, the Aztecs finished overall 84th in SP Plus last year, for example, and 82nd in terms of, like, you know, net points per drive. Mm-hmm. But there are still those wide splits between offense and defense that we've come accustomed to when we're talking about the Aztecs. So, like, in terms of SP Plus, for example, San Diego State was 123rd on offense, but 34th on defense. So it was still very good. And in terms of net points per drive, or excuse me, offensive points per drive, they were 112th and 27th on defense. Yeah, the same thing holds true in terms of available yards percentage as well. And in terms of, like, projected SP Plus for 2023, they're still right outside the top 50. And honestly, wouldn't surprise me if they beat that projection pretty handily, even despite the fact that they're replacing at least a few major players. Like, they've got to find a replacement for Caden McDonald. They've got to find a replacement for Patrick McMorris in the secondary. And then, you know, they have to replace the Tavai brothers, Jonah and Justice. They've got to replace Keshawn Banks. But given past precedents, do you really want to bet against them? Like, they were pretty good across the board, but the bar was not so high last year that they can't do it again. Like, they got better month over month in terms of, like, yards per play allowed last year. Yeah. And by season's end, they were basically in the, you know, the top 30, top 40 in terms of all those things that I mentioned earlier, where the offense really struggled. You know, 33rd with a 7.7% sack rate, for example, 28th in stuff rate, 32nd in power success rate. So even if they're replacing all the star power, you know, there are guys in place that we're about to learn a lot more about, you know, part-timers who have been there over the last couple of years. You know, this is their chance to really step up and make a bigger impact. And I think sort of, you know, one guy who's emblematic of that is Garrett Fountain, who has been a part-time guy over the last couple of years, you know, part-time duty last year. 41 tackles, 6 TFLs, 3 sacks. But I think maybe most interestingly, according to PFF, the fourth most stops of anybody on the defense, 22 altogether, despite playing, I would say, roughly half of the snaps of three guys ahead of him. Like, you know, I mentioned Cade McDonald a minute ago. You know, McDonald played 676 snaps, Fountain played 359, and Fountain had more more stops, according to PFF's definition of them. So, you know, he seems like exactly the kind of guy where, you know, if he can entrench himself as one of those valuable defensive ends, you know, this is a unit that could definitely keep things rolling. And he's not the only one. Like, they got some youngsters, I think chief among them, guys like Darian Dalton, Dominic Oliver, who got their feet wet last year. And they also hit the transfer portal to try and shore things up as well. And they brought in Samuela Tui-Halamaka from Oklahoma State. They brought in Tupu Awolu from the JUCO ranks. And I think that duo in particular, like, if they can be a factor on the interior, really lead the defensive tackle rotation, this defense could be as good as last year if they can hit, you know, a couple of doubles, maybe a home run or two in the trenches in particular. You know, that group, I think, is going to be really important to maintaining last year's success.
And they don't have, like, a strong guy, multi-year starter on the offense, or should be defensive line up front. That's kind of what they've had. And they'll have, it's like, okay, like, again, defense, we give benefit of the doubt for this team. Like, they lose Patrick McMorris. They lose other guys to whatever graduation transfer, those type of situations, just because you only get a couple years to play college football. I'm going to give them, like, hey, they will be good. The elite, possibly, but we know that their floor is extremely high. Like, if they're not great by their version, they're probably fourth in the conference and still miles ahead of the majority of the league. So that's the lowest scenario, but I still think they're higher than that, because last year, what were they, 16th last year in total defense, something like that? And the thing was, here's the problem they have. Like, when they played good teams, good offensive teams, their defense didn't perform all that well. Because the defense numbers, depends if you look at PFF or just normal yards per play or EPA or whatever, look at, like, Parker Fleming does those type of numbers, FEI. Those are better, but you can – overall, the defense might be great, but I know junk time and you go against how good the other team is, essentially, like strength of schedule. There are some bad teams they play, and that could skew a little bit, because when they're playing like Fresno State last year, Air Force, these certain teams, they were not performing well, and that's the area where they need to up their game where they're playing good teams on defense. Mm-hmm. Like, the numbers can skew a bit if you're beating up on Hawaii or New Mexico or Nevada. But you would need to get that same level of play or even close to it. Not going to be the same, because those teams aren't as good as.
Yes, that's fair. Person.
So that's the problem. That's the thing too, where depends what statistic formula you look at. They're still good. I'm not saying they're still not good. Don't confuse me and say, oh, do you think they're a bad team? No, it's that when you go up against a team, an FCS team, or you go up against a team that's 2-10, you're playing Hawaii, Nevada, even CSU. Like, there's opportunities to have you gain confidence. You realize you can do these certain things. But it's different in playing Utah or playing Fresno State or even playing UNLV, where it was 14-10 in that game. The offense didn't help them out that much, but they barely won. But the defense stood out, and going up against the UNLV team last year, who I don't even know what quarterback played that game. They went through so many last year. So that's something to consider. But Air Force game may be different, but it's hard when when your offense scores 3 points, it's hard if your defense plays extremely well. So that's all I'm getting at a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, one major thing that's going to be a point of emphasis in fall camp, I would have to imagine, is, you know, identify who's going to lead the pass rush in particular. Because I mentioned a minute ago, it was a lot better than you might realize. But they're also replacing, you know, 5 of the 7 guys who had multiple sacks for this defense last year. The only guys back who had more than 2 or more sacks are Fountain and linebacker Cooper McDonald. So there's plenty of opportunity. And a very high standard to meet. But I mean, I would probably express caution against bidding against them too much.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm just saying their worst might be fourth in the league. And that
especially since they could be better at linebacker.
Oh yeah, they definitely could be better at linebacker. I'm just saying, great, tough games, tough teams.
Which is saying something, because you're losing both Caden McDonald and Michael Shawcroft. But you know, when you bring in, when you poach one of the better in conference transfers anywhere in the Mountain West this offseason in Cody Moon, yeah, and pair him with a guy like McDonald, who's back, and you know, Zaire Spiasseo, who I believe started, you know, every game in the second half of the last season. You know, that's a trio right there. That's a, you know, that should be able to compete with just about any in the conference. But, you know, Moon in particular, given what he did with New Mexico last year, 105 tackles, 9.5 TFLs, 4.5 sacks. In this offense, I'd like, you know, if you're an Aztecs fan, I wouldn't blame you for being excited to see what he might be able to do. Like, if he's going to play a McDonald type role or a Kaiva Tizino type role, or if he's just going to anger the middle of that defense and let other guys fly around and attack the quarterback and things like that.
Yeah, he legit could be their best player on defense, possibly. Yeah. Year. Coming in. I know they got guys like a couple JUCO guys coming in and Oklahoma State transfers, these guys coming in. It's just an area where we're going to, their coaches, like Kirk Mannix, what he does, he's going to coach Moon up, coach all these guys up in linebacker. And that's what they're typically like. They're one of their best positions almost always is. I know Patrick Morris and DBs get a lot of credit for what they can do getting the ball, but this area is extremely important. And they need a leader on the team, even though he's a new guy. He's been around the conference. He's played against this team before. I'm pretty sure he has in New Mexico at least one point in his career. So it's not like he's unfamiliar with who these opponents are as well, which goes a long way. And it's a small thing, but if you're bringing a guy from, like, their receiver coming from Western Carolina, he doesn't know what the DBs are at Boise or Fresno or Air Force. He has no clue. Where, technically speaking, he'll learn and be fine. But Moon is familiar with who he's going up against. He knows what his own New Mexico team used to do. He knows what this team in Nevada will do, or Fresno State will do. So that's kind of goes a long way, but he's that good where he's probably going to be there's potential. He could be him, DJ Schramm, potentially defensive player of the year candidate, and Cody Moon if he does to what we think he can do.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Easton Gibbs, sorry, should I mention Easton Gibbs as well? Do I need to not disrespect the Cowboys? I was looking at him quick. I know there's somebody else. I was reading off a couple of first team guys. I'm like, all right. But he could be the best linebacker in the conference or up there. And so that's what San Diego State always has, like that you said, the one guy who's going to be the best defender of the team, one of the best in the conference, be a first team guy, and help shape things around him. Ideally, he's the guy who just makes plays. But if he has to be a guy who, oh, they're going to double him or run away from him or do the off pass plays that are not in his direction, well, other guys will shine, hopefully.
Mm.
So that's I'm excited for that position, despite it being basically brand new as well.
I think I'm most excited for the secondary, personally.
Ooh, well, why is that?
So losing McMorris is a blow. I mean, you know, Cal's typically had pretty good defenses, so I guess I can't blame him for making that move. But
yeah, but on a win though, on a win that would be a victory. Get on the podium.
That's a good point. But I think it helps that pretty much everybody else who contributed to this unit last year is back. So, you know, even if McMorris out of that Aztec position is a big loss for them, you know, they also return Kyron White, who, you know, made a couple of starts at a couple of different safety positions for the Aztecs last year. You know, he could probably slot into that, you know, sort of flex safety position for the Aztecs, and they'll be just fine considering they have, you know, Sidarius Barfield is back and Devon Celestine is back, and both of those guys can play cornerback and safety. And then, oh, by the way, they've also got Des Malone back, Noah Avenger is back, Dallas Branch, who, in my opinion, maybe one of, if not the most underappreciated player in the conference over the last couple of years. Yeah, I believe, you know, other than Jonah Tabai, he was one of their top rated defenders in terms of Pro Football Focus overall grade. Number two on this defense, 81.7 overall. I mean, if you prefer layman's terms, over the last couple of seasons, please. He has 5 interceptions, pass breakups, and 7 pass breakups and 7 tackles for loss. He's like the platonic ideal of an Aztecs defensive back. But all of those guys know how to make plays. I think the trick for them heading into 2023 is, you know, trying just to get more hands on footballs, period, because where they led the conference in 2021, 61 total pass breakups, Yeah, they fell last year to around the middle of the pack. You know, they fell from 61 to 38. And while they definitely had success in creating turnovers, same as they had the year before, they had, I believe, 17 interceptions 2 years ago, 13 last season. So, like, that wasn't a problem for them. But in general, like, they can be more opportunistic and play those deep shots more closely. You know, that I think is going to help alleviate whatever, you know, error bars, you might say, that the offense could have. Like, if they give the offense more opportunities to set up shop in favorable positions, that I think is going to help, you know, the Aztecs go a long way towards getting to their ceiling this fall.
No, just kidding. Like, if they, it's going to, like, there's games where you look at the, like, how many rock fights we talk about. They beat Hawaii 16-14. They only beat Nevada 23-7 last year. There's always games where, like I already mentioned, a 14-10 game. So it's things like that, that there could be a problem, or not a problem, where if the offense has a problem, defense bails them out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm getting. Like, so we know what we can do for what it's not we, like, I'm part of the Aztecs team here. Like, what this team can do defensively if the offense struggles, where there's so many unknowns. Defense, this is the first time in a while too, Matt, where it's like, what is a situation of the defense where we're this many question marks? It's been a while, but I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt, like most people are.
All right, what about special teams?
Well, they got Browning back, right? He's a pretty good player, isn't he?
The Jack Browning show, right? But yeah, I mean, he wasn't Matt Araiza. He wasn't an All-American, and he wasn't. But he didn't need to be, because he was still, one, the best punter in the Mountain West, you know, 46.1 yards per punt. And a net, I believe, above 41. I think they were also number one or number two in that regard as well. Also 80% on field goals, including 5 of 9 from 40 and beyond. So that part of special teams is fine. I think the big mystery is, you know, with Jordan Bird, you know, out the door, mm-hmm. who's going to be their return guy?
Oh, I don't know, man, but it's probably gonna be what are they typically put back there? One of their running backs. Did Jesse Matthews get any receptions last year? Kick and return.
I believe he was more of a punt returner than anything. Like, right now,
I'm trying to remember,
you know, Keenan Kristen and Max Garrison are listed as the top kickoff returners. Mekhi Shaw and Barfield are listed as the top punt returners. That's according to their post spring depth chart that they put out back in April. So it could go in any number of directions, but it's sort of the one thing in this area of the game where, you know, after years of sort of knowing what to expect or having an expectation, it's sort of a big mystery.
Because Bird was the best returner. Didn't he have 2 or 3 touchdowns last year returning kicks and punts somewhere? Had a couple.
Yeah.
So overall, I'd say kicking, punting, elite, possibly arguably the best in conference, since Brian is probably the best punter. And could be the best kicker, top three. If the return game is, here's the thing: the return game. It's like, okay, here's an example. Like, I'm sure my NFL watch, but Philadelphia Eagles. The reason I know this because former Utah returner and receiver Brent Covey played there. He basically said, "Fair catch the ball, don't screw up." Which is it's pretty nice to make a NFL minimum salary just for catching every time, and then nearly breaking off one for the Super Bowl. We had like 20 yards on one return, so. You don't want to be noted. You want to be noticed on the return game if you're good, not bad. So I'm not saying just fair catch and be safe with it, but if that's all they are, combined with what they can do punting and kicking, that's fine. That's not what you really want. It's not exciting. It's not what you want, but they will take that over, oh crap, a muff punt. They get at the 3-yard line. Or the guy tries to make a big play. Like, oh, let's try this one play we did once. Those end around reverses, and the guy flips it, and it, oh crap, it went behind me. You don't want that stuff. If these guys are average, that's perfectly fine. And even with that, that would probably still give them the total overall number one special teams if putting and kicking is that good with just an okay return game. Mm-hmm. So that's where I stand on that. They'll be fine. All right. You know what time it is? We talked offense, defense, special teams. Matt, this is the thing people want to hear, our schedule predictions, so they can hate us forever. Right, or maybe like this, I don't know. No fear. All right, so Metro schedule is pretty difficult. They have 2 Power 5 teams, one at home, one on the road for the non-conference play. They play Ohio, conference champion from the MAC to open the year. So let's start there. They go to play the Ohio Bobcats, who, when they played last year, this Ohio team, I guess the way the Ohio team is, they had a couple one score losses. They ended strong by winning the MAC, winning 10 games, beating Wyoming in the bowl game as well. And they returned arguably the best quarterback.
Can I clarify something real quick?
What I messed up on? Yes.
They were actually the MAC runners up. They lost the MAC title game to Toledo. Oh,
apologies. They made it to the MAC title game. I must have been reading too quickly when I was going over the Bobcats. Thank you. So guess what? They're still really good in the MAC. They won 10 games last year.
They won
the bowl game, 10-4. Maybe I looked at first in MAC East or something. I don't know. Okay. Thank you for clarifying. Not MAC champions. Close enough. But Curtis Rourke, first team, possibly once it's official quarterback in the conference. They have also Shea Bengaria, if I'm saying it properly. Apologies if I'm not. Top running back in the conference. Or could be the best one, I believe. This is going to be a team where this is going to test that Aztec defense right away, man. They also have one of the best receivers as well in Sam Wiglis, who had what?
Yeah, I'm willing to cut you a little slack because Ohio had to play that championship game without Rourke because he was sidelined, I believe, with an ACL injury or knee injury. They could have won the MAC, I think, if he had been there. But because he's insanely talented, like he's one of the best quarterbacks in the group of five. He averaged, I want to say, like it was like 316 yards of total offense per game last year. Not just in terms of like passing, but like running as well. He was, Bengura was the lead running back, but you know, Rourke, before adjusting for sacks, had over 400 yards rushing as well, completed nearly 70% of his throws, accounted, I believe, for 29 total touchdowns. So like between, you know, that duo plus leading wide receiver Sam Wiglis, 73 catches, 877 yards and 11 touchdowns. You know, this is an offense that was awesome last year. It really came together. And in terms of like points per drive, just outside, you know, the top 40, just inside the top 40 in points per drive, just outside of it in terms of available yard percentage. So they know how to move the ball. And the major difference, I think, which enabled them to really come out of nowhere after, you know, a big, you know, losing season in 2021 was the fact that the defense really took a step forward as well. You know, they were roughly middle of the pack in terms of available yards percentage and points per drive allowed, but they've got some individuals on that side of the ball who could be a major, you know, could be major factors as well. Like Bonnie Watkins on the defensive line had 14 tackles for loss last year. Key Thompson was an all-conference linebacker. They've got players on both sides of the ball that should pose a pretty stiff challenge right out the gate in week zero. Which is why I have this one penciled as a loss, if I'm being honest.
So do I. I just think it's at home. I get it. It's also first game of the season. So no, obviously no injury concerns or anything like that. But I just think Ohio has a bit too much for an Aztec team. Which, look how many question marks. Everything we talked about previewing offense, defense. Like, well, they're replacing the linebacker group. There's no senior in this. No experienced player here. Running backs. They weren't very good last year. Those are top receivers. The only stability they literally have, like, is sort of a quarterback. Which not nothing for he played half the year. We know who he is. So stability may be still learning, but in special teams, Kiki with Browning. So I just don't think week one, it's going to be a loss too. I got them as even though Aztecs early lines have them at a 3.5-point favorite at home, which is basically pick on them essentially. So that's where I'm thinking it's going to potentially be a loss at the moment. Then they play Idaho State, CBS Sports Network, obviously, because that's where they play their games at. What do I know about the Bengals, who are typically not very good at the FCS level?
Well, we talked about them a little bit during our Utah State podcast. They're one of a few teams that are playing two different Mountain West teams this year. The brief rundown again is that they are starting over. Their head coach, Charlie Ragle, was only there for a year, went 1-10, bolted for Arizona State to work with Kenny Dillingham.
Good call.
They bring in a new head coach, Cody Hawkins, where if the name sounds familiar, that's because he's Dan Hawkins' kid. He was the OC at UC Davis, where, you know, Dan Hawkins is currently the head coach. But this is a team that is really starting over a lot on both sides of the ball. Like, they're losing their top linebacker, Charles Ike. They had three different quarterbacks start games last year. They're bringing only one of them back, Hunter Hayes, who, if memory serves, had more interceptions than touchdowns a year ago. It's a long-term project for these Bengals to try and turn things around. Aztecs should win this one just about as easily as they won this game last year.
All right, now we get to the big game. They play UCLA at home.
Meat regular and potatoes old, time.
Heck yeah. Regular old CBS. Not that we're giving all the game times now. I just happened to notice that there. So that's a good primetime slot for them, 4:30 local. So the Bruins, Matt, obviously Chip Kelly's there for what? This is what, year number five, I think, now, after going to the Eagles and prior Oregon.
Year six, actually.
Oh, year six. Okay, close enough, whatever. They bring a new quarterback. Dorian Thompson-Robinson is gone. Zach Charbonnet is gone. However, people still think like the Bruins could be like a top 25 team preseason wise. They're basically a step below USC, Oregon, Oregon State, and Washington. That being said, Pac-12 is going to be really, really good this year. Not to rub dirt in because Aztecs may or may not be there soon, but Bruins might be honestly top third in the conference, but so they're still a really good team, even if they might be projected like fifth in the league.
Yeah, their offense last year was kind of insane in retrospect. You know, they were top five nationally in terms of points per drive and available yards percentage, but you know, they're replacing the quarterback, they're replacing their top running back. I believe they're also replacing two or three of their top receiving options as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, not just Charbonnet and Thompson Robinson, but you know, Jake Bobo and Kazmir Allen and other guys like that. But they have one of the more interesting quarterback competitions anywhere in the country lining up, you know, for 2023, because they do return Ethan Garbers, who was Thompson Robinson's primary backup last year. They have a five-star freshman, Dante Moore, who could win the job. And they brought in one of the better quarterback from the MAC in Colin Schley. So, you know, that's a three-person race that could go in any number of directions. And it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out, considering they also brought in one of the better running backs available on the transfer portal as well. Carson Steele had over 1,500 yards and 14 touchdowns at Ball State last year. So, you know, they did a pretty good job of poaching the Mid-American. And then the passing game also brought in a couple of transfers as well. You know, they brought in Kyle Ford, cross town from USC. They brought in Maliki Matavao from Oregon at tight end. So, you know, between all of that, you know, they also return, you know, contributors like Michael Sturdivant at wide receiver. The big question, one, you know, how well are they going to be able to battle regression? Because I think it's going to be expecting a lot for them to be as efficient as they were on offense. But the defense is returning nine starters to a unit that was a sieve last year. You know, triple digits in points per drive allowed, triple digits in available yards percentage. That's even despite the fact that they've got Darius Muasau, who you might recall from Miss Hawaii days. He's back. Mm-hmm. You know, he had almost 100 tackles last year and was, I believe, an all-conference linebacker. You know, they brought in transfers like, you know, Jordan Anderson from Bowling Green, Gary Smith from Duke. So, like, they've restocked on that side of the ball, but also return a lot of production. But if San Diego State is gonna make its hay and win this game, they've gotta be able to get things going from the get-go on offense and also find a way to contain a Bruins offense that still figures to be pretty powerful. I think that's gonna be a really tall order for them, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the weakness UCLA brings is potentially their defense. Can the Aztecs take advantage of that?
It's not the same offense that they faced several years ago when they won at the Rose Bowl, which is why I have this one penciled as another loss.
I do as well for a couple of reasons. We forgot to mention that first game for Aztecs is week zero. We didn't mention that, I don't think. So one way I could see this being a potential win still, UCLA plays Coastal Carolina the week before, and that's going to be a pretty tricky game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an area where, okay, maybe there's something going on there where they struggle or whatever. It's just a good team you're playing. Two good teams back-to-back. This is a road game, but it's literally an hour-plus drive down the road to San Diego Snapdragon. So I think it'll be a loss, but it wouldn't necessarily be surprised if they were to get the win. I just don't think Aztecs have enough. Both teams have questions, by leaning toward the team that has better recruiting over the past 5 years, and that's UCLA in the Pac-12.
What about Oregon State then?
On the road, they're not going to be DJ Ungulale out there in Corvallis. I'm telling you, man, I put cold, hard American cash for Oregon State to win the national title this year. My $10 might be wasted, but I'm just saying, I believe Oregon State could be really, really, really good this year. Jonathan Smith, love him, what he does it as a former QB coaching up at Oregon State. They beat Utah 2 years ago. They are a team where if DJU can be above average, because remember he's like, oh, this offense at Clemson's easy and boring. It wasn't very difficult. It was just something that was, it was just basic, and that's why they weren't very good at Clemson. That's what his words. Mm-hmm. So maybe who knows how much you want to believe into that. But he's also not Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm. or even Kelly Bryant for that matter. But FPI has Oregon State 91% chance to win this game. I think Reser Stadium might be complete. I remember there's a few Sonic games there last year. Didn't Fresno play up there last year, Matt? I believe, or we saw Boise as well.
No, they played like at home.
Okay, I forgot one. They played some road game, whatever. When they played home,
Boise State played them on the road.
That's what it was. And I think Utah played out there as well when I watched them play. But their stadium's like half full because of construction issues. So it's kind of a weird looking thing. But like looking at who they have and what they do, they got San Jose State, then UC Davis. They have a couple teams to play before. Davis, whatever, be fine. SCS, San Jose State, pretty good team, I think. But I just don't think, I think the offense is going to be too much for San Diego State to keep pace. Oregon State won 10 games last year and was fifth in the Pac-12. Fifth with 10 wins. And now they get a quarterback who should be pretty good. Their best running back was a freshman, Damian Martinez. This team where they're gonna want to push you around a bit. I'm not sure how much they want to throw because last year they only had 16 touchdown passes. So if they get their QB play up, say, like if DJ gets, 24 touchdowns on the year and 8 picks, that's fine. That's pretty good.
You know, it's kind of interesting because I think when you really think about it, the Beavers and the Aztecs are sort of kindred spirits.
How so?
Because I think they want to rely on a stout defense and a power running game more than they want to rely on a pass heavy offense. So like you mentioned DJ Uiagalelei. One, he's got to win the job first from Ben Gulbranson, who started down the stretch last year.
You are not a transfer quarterback coming in to be QB2. He's starting day one.
Plenty of quarterbacks transfer and don't win jobs. That's all I'm saying. And his struggles at Clemson were very highly, very strongly defined. And while there was like some criticism that came out, after he transferred about Dabo Swinney and whatever was going on out there in the ACC, like you can't just set that aside. That it's not a given that he's going to go and win that job. But regardless of whoever's at quarterback, they're going to have a really strong trio of running backs to rely upon. You mentioned Martinez. Between him, Fenwick, and Jam Griffin, the two of them combined for over 2,000 rushing yards last year and 20-something rushing touchdowns. So, like, between that and an offensive line that still figures to be one of the nation's best, they could very well be a Joe Moore Award finalist when all is said and done, with guys like Jake Levengood, Talese Fuaga, Joshua Gray up front. Quarterback is one big question. What's going to happen on defense when they're replacing a lot at pretty much every position is going to be another, because their top linebacker, Omar Spates, transferred to LSU. Three different guys in the secondary moved on, by graduation or moving to the NFL. And for as strong as they were on that side of the ball last year, it still remains to be seen whether they're going to be able to generate a pass rush, because that was something that they didn't necessarily do all that well last year. They were 119th in the country with a 4.4% team sack rate. So there's questions, but I think I'm with you where, despite the questions of quarterback, I just don't know if San Diego State is going to have the horses on defense to be able to contain the running game. And that's why I have them losing this one too.
I do as well. And I get the point. They're not going to throw a ton, but give me a quarterback. Like their quarterbacks are 16-13. And sack rate was okay. Just overwon a game, which is not, it's fine. One sack game is not going to kill you, but the interceptions did last year. And so if they get a quarterback, I assume it's DJU, but if it's not, and they get reasonably good enough running game, they'll just kind of push them around. And I think that's how Oregon State's going to win. So I have the Aztecs sitting at 1-3 1-3 after non-conference play. And then they get the league
play. And then they get Boise State to open conference play. Oof.
Would I make an error of giving that a win last week? We're talking Boise State because it's a Friday night home game for the Aztecs.
Well, I called it a win for the Broncos.
I said me, not you. You, because I made a mistake. You don't have to. It's okay.
But, I honestly don't recall.
Okay. No, it's, no, I'm saying, like, I picked him as a win. Or I didn't look. Somebody tweeted, he didn't check who they played before. I'm like, I get it. I think at this point, either San Diego State's going to be beat up a little bit because playing three really good teams out of the four in the first month. But Boise State's not invincible either, what we talked about. So go listen to our podcast about them, even though we have them. I have them higher than you do. We could figure out the record if you listen to that show. Won't give it away. But I guess my point stands where I think they'll Aztecs will figure it out at this point, and the level of competition will be about the same, if not maybe a touch less. Not that that matters too much, but we know Boise will be no, – here's where I know, Matt, this first couple weeks, the running game, defensively, we'll know what's going on. We'll know what they have at linebacker, defensive line, after playing.
They're going to get – that front six, yeah. They're going to get tested basically every single week. You know, Ohio, UCLA. Yeah, that's like four of the best running games anywhere in the country right off the bat. We'll see. Oh, yeah, and then you also get Air Force after that on the road.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what the UCLA does running the ball, but we know they won't be a slouch from what they've done last for Zach Charbonnet. So here's my like stretch. I go Air Force. Man, I here's what I have. I'll just kind of go. We're going to run through these because, again, we're not going to do all these deep dives on individual Mountain West teams. We do every show itself for the team. But Boise, Air Force, Hawaii, Nevada, Utah State, CSU, I have the Aztecs on a roll winning six in a row.
Yeah, I have them winning five in a row, starting with that Hawaii game. But I don't think they're going to beat Boise State. I think they're going to lose on the road at Air Force.
So you have four then.
Well, I have them losing four in a row and then winning five in a row, leading into the finale against Fresno State.
Oh, okay. So I stopped. Okay, I see. I'm like, wait, same amount of games. So for me, that has – okay, let's make it more clear for people. Boise State win for me. At Air Force win. At Hawaii. Nevada, Utah State. At CSU win. You're saying – Boise Air Force loss, but then we differ again on the San Jose State game. You have them beating San Jose State on the road?
I do.
Why is that? Explain yourself.
I mean, I think generally speaking, like, you know, those have tended to be pretty close games, and that's also true of the Air Force game too. I looked it up, and in the five last contests between the Aztecs and the Falcons have been decided by 10 points or fewer. So that, you know, despite whatever the advanced numbers might say, has always sort of struck me as a coin flip game. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, you know, the Aztecs versus the Spartans, the Aztecs have generally had San Jose State's number over the last few years. Like, the, you know, going back to 2013, I believe the Aztecs are what they've won 8 of the last 9 against San Jose State. And I do think that, you know, the questions that, you know, San Jose State, at least in my mind, have up front in the offensive line in particular, where we talked about early, you know, just a minute ago, the Aztecs are going to get pushed early by a lot of strong running games. I don't necessarily know if San Jose State has that. I think that they have the potential to have that, but I think that their offensive line is also much less certain in terms of their how they're going to progress from last year too, which is why I have the Aztecs winning that game.
Yeah, Kyrie Robinson, we mentioned, it's a dumb statement. If he plays well, they do well and win. I just think on the road a little bit, their new stadium's kind of completed that. There's not necessarily a big home field, but I think San Jose State's good enough to beat them. Like, they have one of the best, they might have the best quarterback in the conference in Shavon Cordero. Like, he's a top QB in the league. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where it could be done. But games prior, anything else like at Hawaii? No, Nevada, definitely not there yet. Utah State could be interesting. It's at home, but Cooper Legault could sling it and maybe get something done against this secondary. But by this point, like, what's that, game number 9? 10, we'll know what they have. And is Utah State have a running back with Briggs there? Maybe not. We'll see. We've talked about Utah State. We did talk about Utah State before. Apologies. So you can go check out that out who they have. But that's probably out of that stretch. It's a game I can see them not winning. But Nevada almost for a certain win at Hawaii. What about at CSU? Is that Clay Millen?
I was just going to say that.
What do you think about that one? I have this win. I think it'd be close because, again, look at all these quarterbacks. Like, we mentioned a running game, like the first half. Look at the throwing the second half. Hawaii's going to want to throw the ball with what they do. Utah State, Cooper Legault, Clay Millen, Shavon Cordero. We'll get to Fresno in a minute. Jeff Tedford will want to throw the ball. What are your spots on the thoughts on the Spartans, or not Spartans, but the Rams being like that's a sneaky good game, I think, late in the year?
It's all going to come down to their offensive line. I think a lot of it is going to down to their offensive line. You know, we talked about the Rams, and I do think that, you know, I'm relatively bullish on their defense. Yep. But I think it's going to just come down to how much more can they protect Clay Millen to get that offense off the ground more consistently.
If they were to give up 2 sacks versus San Diego State, could they win that game?
Yes.
What's like your threshold? They're losing them at, like, I know it's a dumb stat, sacks. If it's like more than 3, is it like a guaranteed loss, you think? Like 4 plus?
I think if it's more than 3, it's definitely trending in the wrong direction.
Totally.
I'll say that much.
I know you're not giving me the full answer, but I get it. Like, it goes back to just protecting him well enough. Mm-hmm. Like, a couple, like, if Millen gets 20 sacks on the year, that's not too bad. That's like 1.5 a game. That's not terrible. But let's not forget,
like, they pivoted to more of a power running game in the second half of last year and had a bunch of close calls that didn't necessarily go their way. So it wasn't like they were getting blown out week after week as the season progressed either. Like, they had a very close loss to Wyoming, very close loss to Utah State, close wins against Nevada and Hawaii. So it could go and it could, you know, it could be another coin flip game if Colorado State bounces back with a vengeance and San Diego State doesn't resolve all of their lingering questions with an exclamation point. Like, that's a game that could surprise people by how competitive it is.
Also, Avery Morrow seems likely not to be on the team, so that's something too to watch for the Rams. So that could diminish their running attack. All right, Fresno State at home. What do you have for them for your Bulldogs?
Well, I have the Aztecs losing that game.
So do I. What's your reasoning behind, despite neither of us knowing the quarterback at the moment for Fresno State? Running back is new. They lose a couple receivers, lose a couple guys to Washington State, lose a couple defenders. Is it just, in my opinion, the offense will still be too much for them? And Fresno's defense is still pretty above average. Not great.
It's defense. Yeah. It's defense.
Defense. You think defense? Fresno just shut them down?
I think they are the most one of the more likely candidates to shut them down, too. Yeah.
What makes them that?
I mean, I think that you have to sort of look back into the matchup last year's game where it was right there for San Diego State's taking, and then they were mistake prone down the stretch.
That makes sense. Yeah. Now I just try to think like,
what, and I think that's one thing when I'm looking at the games that I have penciled as SDSU losses, Boise, Air Force, and Fresno State. I think that's sort of the other overarching question that's going to define their season is, you know, for as promising as the Aztecs offense can look, what are they ultimately going to achieve against the defenses that are likely to be at or near the top of the Mountain West?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Like, how consistently are they going to be able to move the ball, and how well will they be able to avoid turnovers in those situations?
That's a fair point. Like, those couple of teams you mentioned for losses, they have good defense.
And that's, and you know, on, and to be frank, like, I know that there's a lot of preseason prognostications out there that have sort of penciled San Diego State in as a legitimate contender. And to me, like, I think they're closer to that second tier right now, just because I don't know ultimately what the offense is going to look like. Like, I feel pretty good about the defense and their ability to keep them in the mix most weeks. I just don't know about the offense.
That's the thing. Like, Phil still has him number 2. I'm like, okay, why? What, like, what? Not, this is not a dish on San Diego State, but what do they have coming back? Like, what position group is, like, solidified? We know, besides quarterback, is Jalen Maiden, and he'll take a big jump. They only have, that's the only real position group, and I guess Kiki with Browning there. What group, like, hey, we know our guy at right receiver is this guy. Our linebacker is this guy. I know Cody Moon, but he's a transfer coming in. Like, what position group sort of solidifies, like, we know this group is this, and they're going to achieve this. We don't know secondary. That for half the okay, that's it, right? Maybe quarterback and secondary? Even losing Patrick Morris, you feel that way?
Yeah.
Okay, but not many positions. If you look at the Boise State, just for example, quarterback, they know, even though it's a fairly similar situation, so I'd put that in the same area. Running back, they have 2 guys. Wide receiver, we know they're coming back in. If you look at other teams in the conference, like legit contenders in the conference, there's only there's a couple, like Wyoming's defense is legit amazing. We know what we're getting from their quarterback, even though if it's good or bad. We know what they're coming from their running back position. We know what San Jose State's going to do in passing the ball and throwing the ball and what they can do defensively a bit, even though there's a couple of guys. Aztecs, as it, like, they have a lot more question marks than people are saying. Like, people, they could do, like, could they do it and go 10-2? Maybe. But, like, if I look at my schedule here, like, I could probably flip San Jose State to a win, but probably flip Boise to a loss. They could lose to the Air Force. I have them at 7-5 and losing two conference games. And losing two conference games probably could do well enough to put them in the conference championship. They may not be 12 wins. Like, when did they have 12 wins? Was it last year when they got shut out of the title game? Was that last? Was it two seasons ago? When was that? They had 12 wins.
Well, no, two seasons ago they had 12 wins and won the West division.
Oh, maybe I think it's something else. Okay, maybe my mistake there. I think it's for some reason I think it's something else. But point being, they could have a not great win loss record, but still make it to the title game because their non conference slate is very difficult. Clearly, for what we've gone over, they have a lot of question marks. Like what I fear, they could they lose to Boise State? Yeah, could they lose to Air Force? Yeah, could they lose to Utah State? Yeah. Like, there's a lot more losable games on here, but I trust them more often than not, and especially defensively, and Maiden's growth, where they'll be better. But could they beat Ohio at home? Possibly. Maybe. That puts them at 8-4. That's not an elite team. That's a pretty good team, but an average team. But I think I think any team that gets two conference losses is going to be right there to be in the title game. And I think that's where they'll be knocking on the door with two conference losses, but 7-5 overall.
Yeah, I had them at 6-6 and 5-3.
Oh boy, they're gonna hate you, Matt.
I think, I mean, but I'm with you in that if they play closer to like the best case scenario where, you know, the offense is humming, you know, Maiden, you know, takes a step forward and cutting down the mistakes and is just as potent about, you know, stretching the field with the passing game, and the running game is just a little bit better, then yeah, this is probably a team that can win 10 games and walk into the championship game, maybe even host it. I just don't think that's the likeliest scenario. I think the likeliest scenario is one where they end up, you know, with another frustrating season on their hands, and or, you know, one thing goes wrong one week and another thing goes wrong in another week. There's just, I like some of the things they have going for them. But, like, for example, if they can't replace Jonah Tavai, Kashawn Banks, and those guys in the front six, they're going to have a hard time against, you know, strong, you know, likely strong passing games like Oregon State, Boise State, Fresno State, or even, like, you know, like you mentioned, Colorado State and San Jose. If they can't make any progress on the offensive line, that could stunt the offense's overall progress. That could, you know, help them, you know, get, you know, that could make them, you know, potential upset victims against some of the teams that we mentioned here, like Hawaii could jump up and surprise them. There's just a lot of uncertainty, or I think they're definitely going to be good enough to be a bowl team, but I don't think they're a surefire lock to make it to a conference championship this year.
No, they're not a lock, but if they're two losses, they're going to be tiebreaker scenarios.
I just don't see it.
Well, what do you mean? Don't see they'll be in contention or don't see they'll be there?
I just don't see that they'll be in contention.
Okay. We'll see. I guess I'm a little bit higher on them. Say, like, what Maiden can potentially do. But I ultimately think at 7-5 and two legal losses, they're not going to be in the title game. They'll be close, but I can see anywhere from like 6-9 wins. There's a pretty big wide gap for what this team could be. Again, Air Force loss, maybe Utah State, maybe beat Ohio. Is there going to be any, let's wrap up with this. Since the, they're hanging around the Mountain West. Do you think the players or coaches are going to get some extra fuel? Like, these guys want out of here and want to beat the crap out of them?
Oh, show absolutely. Them on the way out?
Do you think that's going to play into a factor for maybe an extra loss potentially?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear. That's like saying, like, it's like these guys, they don't care about you. They think they're better than you. I can see the coach F-bomb here, square word here.
That's going to happen.
Oh, I totally know. I just wanted to talk about it because that's exciting. They're going to come in and say they don't want to be part of your league, they don't want this. And then I guarantee when they play UCLA, see, they're scared. They're leaving because they don't want to play us every year in the Pac-12 when we get there. But I get it. It'll totally be used, and they'll get the best shot every week because that's what they think they're better than everybody else on the way out to potentially still likely Pac-12. But That'll be this season will be fun to watch how teams prepare and talk about San Diego State. Media Day is going to be spicy next in a couple weeks, so it'll be fun. Any other final party thoughts on the Aztecs this year? Are we good to wrap it up and say go to Twitter and or wherever you can vote for next show?
I think we are pretty much all set for now.
All right. Excellent, folks. So MWR.com. As long as Twitter's around, then you can view your six. Don't make us our 600th first tweet, Matt. You got to be 600 or fewer to view us, apparently. I guess that's the rule, whatever it may be. But go to MWC Wire to share the post, share the show, vote on the next set of teams we're going to talk about. And yeah, if you missed any of our other shows, Boise, CSU, or Utah State, go back and check those. And we'll see you next week where we'll be talking about, we'll be halfway through our preview season, Matt. That'll be great.
Number five. So we'll be close.
Close to halfway. I can't count. 5 of 12 will be next show. So we'll see you then.